Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Just like last week, Steve and I are talking remotely. Last week you weren't feeling well, but we didn't know what was going on. We know now. So if you want to tell them your experience, go ahead.
Yeah. I think I tested positive for COVID. I did, my daughter did. What's interesting is that, so my daughter tested positive, yet she was relatively asymptomatic. She had a fever one day, a mild one. It was at like 100. And we gave her some Tylenol, and fever went away. And that was pretty much her only symptom. She's a little moody, a little cranky, but she's been like her normal self. I think recently I just realized there's a constipation issue, but that's a separate conversation, I guess.
Yeah,
but constipation is something that that has caused some people some problems with COVID. So that's just something to keep in mind. My personal experience was not asymptomatic. I had multiple symptoms. I never really got a fever, but I did have congestion, coughing, sneezing. The body aches are really the hardest part have been one of the hardest parts for me. They've just been debilitating. Where it feels like I've been in a prize fight and taking body shots throughout the fight. Actually, what's funny is I feel like the only other time in my life that I felt like I did the last few days, when I was in college, we played a Saturday game, we played a day game. And after that game, one of my teammates was joking around, driving his Jeep in the parking lot, was speeding. He slid on the brakes and right in front of me and Nasty Nate, slid through the gravel and actually hit me. And I rolled up on his hood and into the windshield, which was a little bit problematic because we had to explain why I, walked out of the game injury free and ended up back in the clubhouse with a concussion and possibly bruised or broken ribs, after a game. So, right. But that pain that I felt that day of having just played a football game and then being hit by a car, that's how I felt pretty much every day having COVID. It just constantly was like pain and pressure. Like on any injury I've ever had, the inflammation around those injuries was just enhanced tenfold. It was hard to get up in the morning. It was hard to find a comfortable spot, position to sit or lay in. Making it hard to sleep, but you're already you're fatigued beyond being tired, right? Like you're just kind of, you feel like a zombie, and that fatigue I think brings on this like brain fog, where it's very hard to concentrate and it's hard to think. I've got a very, my patience is very limited. I've got a very short fuse. And I've been known to run a little hot and have a temper just normally.
Never noticed.
With this, it's been really tough. Obviously I treat I treat my daughter with kid gloves, but pretty much everything else, infuriates me pretty quickly with this whole thing. And it's just, part of it is being tired. Part of it, it's just your mood. I don't want to get mad. Some of the things, Jim, you and I have had text exchange where, for whatever reason, I just get infuriated by everything. And it's not just you. I had to tell my whole family to stop texting me because we were in this group family text chain. And my phone almost went through a window. So, it's just those weird little things. And then, the coup de grace of this whole fucking thing is I lost my sense of taste and smell. So I can't taste food and I can't smell anything. You know, there could be a fire and I wouldn't smell it. I wouldn't know. You know, it's just a really, really bizarre thing, but it's not just like, oh boy, I can't taste food. And, you know, that's annoying, which it is, because I enjoy food a lot. I smoke a lot of meat. But the thing about it is that because I can't taste and I can't smell, it's almost like there's not a connection between my brain and my stomach. So me, of all people, I'm forgetting to eat meals. In fact, now that we're having this conversation, I just realized I haven't consumed a single bit of food since 8 o'clock this morning, what? Which for me is like unheard of. I just realized that I haven't eaten since 8 o'clock this morning and it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's just because like I can't taste food. It's very like now it's very laborious to eat it. At first it was kind of like, let me eat these random things just to see if I can taste them or smell them. And once the novelty wears off after a day and a half or so, now like you're stuck eating this food that you can't taste. And it's a chore. And so because I can't taste it, like I'm really not spending money on ordering food. Because that's frustrating. So I'm, you know, eating just a lot of, you know, I'm going, burning through my chicken supply. And like, I don't even season it, right? Like, I mean, it's just like I cook it just to make sure it's not super dry, but I'm not seasoning it. I'll throw it on the smoker for a little bit, throw it in a salad, and then just choke it down. You know, like I'm out of salad dressing. And it doesn't matter because it doesn't, like, I just put a little olive oil and a vinaigrette, raspberry vinaigrette, a red wine vinaigrette on my salads. And that's just so they're not completely dry, but I can't taste it. You know, I hate that combination of salad dressing. I hate it, but because I can't taste it, like, that's pretty much all I'm eating if I'm eating. And apparently today I've chosen to do very little of the eating part. So
do you want to take a break and go get some food?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. Yeah. If I get too hangry or ornery, then, you know, you can tell me to
go get
shut it down and go eat, but I think I'll be okay.
All right. Yeah. So anyway, I've been worried about you. And I was kind of hesitant to what a mutual friend of ours asked me asked me if we were hanging out for the game, which we'll get to at the end. And I was hesitant. Like, I didn't want to tell him Steve has COVID because it's a kind of a private thing. I mean, I know this show does not have HIPAA restrictions on it, but I didn't want to do that without, you know, your prior approval. So I texted you and you were like, yeah, tell him because people need to know this is happening. You know, here's all these people who are still in denial of this whole fucking thing. And I was actually going to, when you put your story on Facebook, I wanted to put on, and we better collect a GoFundMe for Steve's bail for the next person who tells him it's a hoax.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll get to that. But yeah, it's just so important. Like, I'm frustrated because I put it on my personal Facebook that I had COVID and kind of like some of the symptoms I had. And there was an outpouring of support, which I always appreciate, that always reminds me that, you know, people don't suck as bad as they purport to on social media. But the other part that was kind of frustrating is there were another number of people who, oh, I had it at this point in time. I had it in September. I had it in April. I had it, you know, a few months ago. I had, you know, like all these people coming out and saying that they had it. I even got phone calls, right? Phone calls from friends of mine in Youngstown, like asking me about symptoms because they're going through it right now, or telling me about their situation. And the reason why it was a little bit frustrating is because, like, I think people need to know, like, we need to share this stuff, right? And people want to go to the, oh, I'm a very private person and I don't like to put my, listen, this is what community is all about, people. Right? Like, we've been programmed to believe that you have to keep everything private, keep it all to yourself, and you live in your house, and you don't really interact with your neighbors, and you don't, right? Like, never tell anyone how much money you make, do everything in private, no, never tell anyone your next move, right? Like, those are all the memes and the posters that tell you how to be successful. Well, all that really does it prevents information from getting out. And that's the, like, if you believe that there's this, like, there's this shadow overlord or whatever out there, then, you know, never sharing how, you know, not sharing your salary is on the top of the list, right? Because people love to keep that shit private, but ultimately businesses love keeping that private because it allows them to beat down salaries and pay certain people less for the same work that other people are doing, right? But in this situation with COVID, I think it's crazy that people aren't sharing the fact that they have it and what their symptoms are, right? And that's part of the problem that allows so much of this bad information to go around that, oh, it's not as widespread as the media wants you to believe. Like, bitch, I live in fucking Fairview Park in Cleveland, right? Like, I have it, right? Like I live in a suburb of Cleveland, and I have it. So according to you fucking crazy people who say that this thing isn't that widespread, I shouldn't have it. I'm not, this isn't New York. This isn't California. This isn't Tokyo or, you know, someplace right. like that where we're all living on top of each other and taking the subway everywhere. But yet, here I am. So I think it would be so much more beneficial to the community as a whole if people shared their experience. That, you know, you had this thing, your wife had it, your kid had it, whoever. And just to talk about it, because it's fucking terrifying, right? Like, sure. You get it, and then all of a sudden, like, things start to happen, and you don't know what this is, right? Like, I mean, like, the other, you know, like, I rarely ever get a nose. Like, the only time I've ever gotten nosebleeds is from being, you know, my helmet coming down on my nose, or, you know, like, getting punched in the face in a fight or something like that. But those are the only times I've ever had a nosebleed. And I woke up yesterday and I had a nosebleed. And that scared the shit out of me because that's just so abnormal for me, right? And I told you, like, I think I need to put a humidifier in your room, in my room, because of dry air. You said that's a thing that you have to do normally, but yeah. I never have to do that. Never. I've lived in this house for 4 years now, and I've never had an issue with the air being too dry. And now all of a sudden, I woke up, and I sneezed a little bit, and, like, it was gross, everything that came out, but then, like, once I cleared my nose, the snot and everything else, then blood started to come out of my nose, and that was a weird moment for me. So I just think that it's important that people share their experience with this thing, and not so much to spread fear, and but just so that, like, look, we need, like, if we talk about what's going on with it, right, and we at least, and we have a base level of understanding just from a civilian standpoint, right, of one guy to another, hey, this is my experience, this is what I dealt with, these are some of the weird things that happened to me, everybody's experience is different, but at least if you experience something like I experienced, you know that that particular thing isn't unique to you, and maybe it's not the thing that you need to run and go to the hospital for, or maybe it is, right, because my buddy called from Youngstown, and he was having really bad chest pains. He's got COVID right now. He was having really bad chest pains. And I told him, I was like, look, man, I think you need to go get a chest x-ray. He's like, well, I went to my doctor and they listened and they didn't hear anything. Well, okay. Listen, you make a decision, but, like, if you're having chest pains, it may make sense to go get your chest looked at, and have a workup, because, you know, like, you could be going down the road of pneumonia, and that's where this thing really gets people. So that's my experience. Like I said, I wanted to share it. I wanted to get it out there. You know, we had Ben Eves on the show about a month back, and he was talking about, you know, it got his son, and the bigger thing with his son is recovering from it. You know, and so I appreciate him for sharing that. And I just am sharing my experience right now. This is, for me, I think, officially went on quarantine Thursday of, like, not this past Thursday, but, you know, two Thursdays ago. So it's been, like, 10 or 11 days. And so I'll probably be coming out of quarantine here at the end of this week. You know, and I just want to make sure my symptoms are a little bit better in check before I get back out into the open world. But yeah, that's my experience with this thing. So it's definitely real. And then the people out there saying that it's a hoax, that the virus is not real and that people are lying, I have no patience for those people. I didn't before I had it, just with the lives that it touched before it actually came into my home. So now I have even less patience for it. There's one guy in particular at my gym who, you know, pushes these YouTube videos out of this Dr. Kaufman, who says that the virus isn't a real virus, and that that the media is lying to you. And, you know, it's just like, all right, doc, well, what the fuck do I have? Why can't I taste food? Why can't I smell a fire if one starts in my house, right? Like, why can't I breathe right now? Why is blood coming out of my nose? Why does it feel like I'm being crushed by fucking Thanos every time I take a step? What exactly is that, right? Is that a part of this grand hoax? Is this a part of this grand scheme that the entire world is in on, right? Like, it's a big mind fuck. It's a Jedi mind trick to make me believe that my fucking body is going through the shit that it's going through right now. Was it a giant Jedi mind trick that killed my friend fucking Corey Cyber? In Massachusetts, right? Is that all just a part of this grand scheme, right? These people are fucking grifters. They're taking advantage of stupid people. If you believe this virus isn't real, you're a fucking stupid person, right? I'm just done with it. I don't give a fuck if it hurts your feelings. I don't care if you don't listen to the show. I don't care if you want to fight me. In my sick, in this way I feel right now, right? If you came to my house thinking that you could take advantage of me because I'm sick, I will fucking rip your throat out. That's how angry I get when people say shit like, this isn't real, it's a hoax, it's bullshit, right? It's just completely, like, the idea that people would lie about something that's killed hundreds of thousands of people, and then people who didn't die who are going to have side effects that we don't know how long they're going to last is fucking pure insanity. So, yeah, I disagree vehemently with the idea that this is a hoax, considering the fact that I'm going through it and living it right now.
And to add to that, you called me and told me, I've been in contact with somebody that tested positive, so you should know that. I then had to go through the rigmarole for getting tested, but, you know, in addition to your story, you also have the fact that you had the, you know, decency to reach out to me and say, hey, this happened, so, you know, you and I had been in close contact. Now, we've been smart about things. We don't, you know, handshake and hug anymore. It's been fist bumps and see you laters. But, you know, if you have it, or if you come in contact, you have to take that step and reach out to the people that you've been in close contact with.
Yeah. I mean, and that was, you know, that was a big part of it. You know, part of it, you know, my sister who got COVID, and was a nurse, at a facility for older people. She ended up leaving that job. And a lot of it was because of the just anguish she was experiencing, right? Like, she had already experienced COVID herself firsthand. But then, you know, her job, she watched a lot of people, older people, but still a lot of people die prematurely from this thing. So she had to leave that job because of what it was doing to her mental state. And now she does contact tracing,
right?
So, you know, and I had, you know, I've been in contact with her and everything else, but, like, you know, my sister going through the contact tracing, she's like, all right, well, this is what you need to do, and this is who you need to contact, and, you know, like, you need to go through a list, and so I did. I went through and I made sure that, you know, my people at my job, people at my gym, you know, that they knew what was going on with me and that they took the appropriate steps to make sure that they got themselves tested. Listen, this thing, what's crazy about this thing is that it affects everybody differently, right? Like,
right.
I mean, my daughter, completely asymptomatic other than a fever and the fact that she might be constipated right now, but none of the aches and pains and shit that I'm feeling, she can still smell. You know, right now I'm relying on her and my dog that I've owned for, you know, a month, that if something happens, you know, that, you know, a fire or noxious gas or something like that to alert me, because I can't smell anything, right? Like, I mean, I got a candle from Bath and Body Works, you know, and I stuck my whole face in the damn thing and I can't smell it. You know, so if there's a fire in my house, I might smoke my I tested my smoke detectors and I'm glad they work, but they better work because I'm not going to smell it.
Well, obviously the hope there is you don't have a fire, but yeah, I never thought about that aspect of the safety thing with, you know, sometimes being able to detect something by smell matters. So let's jump into politics if we can, because it's kind of a big day. The Electoral College is certifying their votes today. I've been watching it casually. There have been no surprises, no whatever. In fact, now, based on what's been certified, unless California flips, it's official. It's over, folks. Let's try to accept the results that we're using basically exactly the same system that got your guy in, and now he's going to have to head on his way out. Obviously, he's not doing it gracefully so far. I keep hoping that there's a moment of clarity with this guy where he finally says, okay, I now at least need to avoid looking like a whiny, pouty, sore loser because that's going to affect my legacy and my future in terms of my, you know, credibility going forward with whether it's a news network or running for another public office. Keep hoping that's going to happen. Have not been holding my breath, and I probably shouldn't because I'd have been dead about 12 times now if I did.
Yeah, I mean he's not going to let up, right? I mean even though their chance at it, what's interesting is as their chances of getting this election overturned fade, like they keep banging the drum louder, right? Like they get a little bit more ridiculous to the point where Stephen Miller today, you know, Trump's trusted advisor, came out and said that there's going to be alternative electors who will right the wrongs of a fraudulent election and do the right thing and put names in for Trump for the current contested states. And the thing about that is the only way that that could possibly happen, you would need approval from both Congress and the Senate. And then you would have, but you can't just pick and choose, right? Like, so you couldn't say, the electors from Texas, they get to stay, but we want to swap out Pennsylvania, Georgia, you know, and the states that we disagree with. No, that would mean all the electors from all the states would have to go, and you'd have to get all new electors across the board. And what's funny is, I don't even if they did that, I'm not sure if that actually goes Trump's way either. But that's the only way that it could happen. So, you know, as this gets further and further away from them, they're going to continue to bang the drum louder because to them, and what we've proven as a country is, you know, we talk big talk about accountability, right? But ultimately, there's been no accountability for Trump and his administration or his followers and supporters for saying and doing whatever they want. Right. I mean, and to a degree, like there, you know, you've had that lack of accountability for the progressive left. You know, people on the progressive left say some pretty nasty, shitty, just ignorant things to people who disagree with them. And there's limited or no accountability for it. And so what the Trump people figured out back in 2015 was, you know, we can be ridiculous. We can say what we want. Yeah, people will be mad, but there's no recourse, right? Like there's nothing like if we can say this, we can lie about this, we can lie about that. As long as we don't do it, you know, under oath, right? As long as we don't do it in front of Congress, as long as we don't do it in front of the Senate, as long as we don't do it in front of a judge, right? Then we're good. And so they're going to continue to bang this drum. He's going to keep saying it was fraudulent up until I guarantee January 20, whatever, right? Like even like he's going to continue to say it until 20, until he dies, really, right? I mean, because even if he runs in 2024, he's going to run on the idea that the 2020 election was stolen from him. He should have been the president the last 4 years, and he's going to pick up where he left off, and he's going to right the wrongs, and blah 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 blah. Like this isn't going away, right? Like, and then once he gets full control of Newsmax or whatever it is, whatever media outlet is going to be his, you know, home base, then he's just going to amplify the message that he was done wrong, it was fraudulent, and the media hates him, and, you know, everything is going to, he's going to create this entire ecosystem of, whether it's Newsmax or, you know, One American News, and then that social media app Parler, he's going to use it just to amplify and inflate his message amongst his followers, and then they're going to come out swinging in 2024, guaranteed.
Well, I'm worried about what's going to happen between now and 2024. Actually, I'm worried about what's going to happen between now and January 20th. in fact, I'm going to take a ride through that neighborhood that constantly has, well, it's my neighborhood, but the area that constantly has the Trump Stop the Steal protests to see if they're out there today. I'll do that right after the show. I will not be engaging with them because there's no point. But
well, I guess what's your concern? What's your concern?
It's curiosity. I'm just curious to see if they're still clinging to the "it's not over." I mean, this is reminiscent of when Obama got elected and they did everything, the whole birther thing started, which ironically is what put Trump in the White House. But the whole birther thing was fucking ridiculous. And people clung to it for years. I've still got friends who I will say, "You'll admit now that that was crazy, right?" "No. I'm still not." "Okay, well, you admit he's an American citizen, right?" "I don't know." "Like, really? You don't?" Because Trump bragged about proving he was and then went back to denying it. This is literally cult leadership here. And I'm seeing David Koresh in this guy every time he talks now. It's just like he's saying wacky shit, trying to fire up people who will follow him blindly to the end. And I don't know how you cure that.
That's the thing. Like, you don't cure it. You don't. We have to keep an eye on them. We got to watch them. They're going to self-isolate, right? I mean, and if we're calling them a cult, they're going to do what cults do. They're going to, like, you know, whether it was David Koresh or Jim, you know, Jim Jones, they went off into the jungle. David Koresh, they had the
compound.
The compound. You know, all these cults are the same. So what happens is Trump and his supporters are going to self-isolate. But instead of physically doing it where they all just go to one spot, like, they're going to self-isolate on social media. They're going to go to, you know, places that are, you know, friendly to their message, which is Parler. They're going to go to news media places that will support and blast their message, which is Newsmax and One American News. And that's where they're going to do what they do. And like a cult group, I think the rest of us, American citizens and the government, you watch them. You know, you try to prevent them from getting people close to you, but if they get them, once they get them, they have them. And there's very little you can do to bring people back once they cross that line. There'll be some defectors who realize, like, Jesus Christ, this is insane. And those people will then, you know, especially the higher level people will realize it, and then they'll try to take advantage of it. They'll write a book. They'll do there'll be a 60 Minutes, like, "Yeah, he really had me believing, and then one day I saw the light." Like, you know, all this shit is coming, you know, but they're going to have a powerful foothold and a powerful group for a while. I don't think this dies down. I don't think you cure it. I think we just have to watch it and make sure that it doesn't turn into something even more dangerous, right? It already is. There is a certain level of danger to it, but you just have to watch for, you know, people really getting to the part of insurrection where they're like, "All right, fuck it. No one's listening to us. You know, the message isn't getting across. We have to take this into our own hands," and people taking up arms and actually trying to, you know, bring an actual true, like, war type scenario to the table.
Well, the Twitter account for the Republican Party in Arizona actually tweeted something to the extent of, this is something worth dying for. We talked about it a bit before the show, but basically saying that this is a call to arms. I think they took the tweet down. I couldn't find it.
Well, it was from 6 days ago, and I feel like, so that was the, it's the Arizona GOP or the Arizona Republican Party. And what they did was they reached, so a person that they follow, I guess, tweeted that, an individual tweeted that they were willing to die to get the right outcome for the election, which is having Donald Trump, you know, reelected. And so Arizona GOP comes out and retweets that saying, you know, he's willing to die for this. Are you? And yeah, that's scary. Now, mind you, the Arizona GOP isn't an official government entity. And you know, it's just, it's a political party that has ties to government, but they're not an actual government entity. So they're private, and what that they're taking advantage of a situation. You know, I don't think, is it really, is that a call to arms? I think there are people who will hear that. If the wrong person hears that, they could definitely take that the wrong way. That's definitely a real legitimate risk that we have to be on the account for. But these Republican Party leaders who have bought into Trump hook, line, and sinker, they're doing this for the attention, right? Like, because it gets them so much attention, it puts them in a position where they're in Trump's favor. And so, you know, 2024 rolls around, you know, when 2023 comes up and the campaign gets heated up, you know, they're going to be first in line for a position on the Trump campaign team. And which means if he wins, they get access to the White House or some role or position. And it raises their star. And I think that's a lot of what this is. People, you know, trying to jump on something that they believe can be beneficial to them.
Well, I think also most of the Republican members of Congress who are refusing to acknowledge that the election's over, I think they're terrified of being primaried. I don't even think that takes Sherlock Holmes to figure it out. They know that if they're not loyal to Trump till the end, that come their next election cycle, which is only 2 years away, they're going to be targeted by the pro-Trump crowd. And they're, I mean, pretty much the only way you lose a seat in the House these days is if you're redistricted or if you're primaried. And they've all seen it happen. I mean, Jeff Flake in Arizona literally said, I'm going to speak my mind and go against Trump. And by the way, I'm not running for re-election. I think that was his way of saying, I know if I do this, I'm going to get primaried, so I might as well go out on my own terms. Ironically, Arizona is one of the states that went for Biden and kind of shocked the system. So, anyway, it's going to be crazy to see what happens in the next election cycle. And up until January 21st, I'm very concerned about how the public is going to treat one another. I'm trying very hard to be nice. I actually put something on Facebook about being nice, and a couple of my liberal friends jumped in and said, no, I'm not going to be nice. I'm like, okay, if I'm going to complain when other people act like children, I can't act like a child. And yes, I'm known for my snarkiness from time to time or regularly, but ultimately, not treating people like, ha ha, you lost, and make it all just keep steamrolling it's bad to contribute to the problem, not be part of the solution. We've been through a lot as a country. Time to play nice. Let's acknowledge that the election was in fact legitimate. When Kylie McEnany said something like, the chances of this are 1 in 4 quadrillion or whatever she said, I'm like, A, I don't think you know how stupid that sounds. And B, 4 quadrillion, anyway. 15 zeros, kid. You're insane. And then she claimed because of the 4 states, it was that to the 4th power, which is mathematically wrong and incredibly stupid. The good news of the day, we don't want to talk about this long now if we don't have to, but the vaccine has started coming out. All the news networks were showing people receiving the vaccine. I would like to do a special thing where I talk about, take the frequently asked questions about the vaccine that friends are coming at me about, because I do work in pharmaceutical manufacturing. and shoot them down, but I don't want to do 2 hours of that on here. You ready to move on to Hunter Biden?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing about the vaccine, what I think is interesting now is that because I have COVID right now, you know, I the vaccine really won't come into play for me for, you know, I don't know, like, I think like 6 months or something like that. Which I have to be honest, I have some concerns about the vaccine, and not so much because of the vaccine itself, right? Like, so the science behind the vaccine using the mRNA, like that, like I've got, you know, friends who are doctors who study this, who've explained it to me pretty, in a pretty clear fashion where I can process it, because this isn't my world. I feel comfortable with it, but what I, just knowing the history of this country, there is a little bit of a pause for me as a Black American to trust Big Pharma and the U.S. government to do this right. Like, I mean, the first thing I saw this morning on CNBC was, you know, a Black doctor giving the vaccine to a Black nurse, and man, that just rubbed me the wrong way. And if you understand our country's history, from the Tuskegee experiments to experiments on slaves with gynecology and other things this country has done to Black people in terms of experimenting on us, it just gives me kind of a bad vibe, you know. And it's one of those, you know, give it to everybody else first, and see how it goes. And now that I have it, that kind of takes me out of the loop. Not that I would be in line to get it first anyway, but it takes a little bit of pressure off me, you know, and my daughter was too young to receive it anyway, so that is comforting. But, you know, it puts a little bit of a buffer between, you know, when I actually have to make a decision of, do I get this thing or not?
I think we can make that a separate show. I was going to do it solo because I didn't think you'd want to sit through listening to me talk about vaccine development and how the things that, like I said, I didn't want to go down a whole technical thing here, but
we could do it. And again, my concern isn't necessarily like the actual vaccine, but my concern is, do I trust that they're going to give me what they say they're going to give me, you know?
This is definitely a white privilege thing. That concern didn't occur to me. And again, total white privilege thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just understanding. It's just having an understanding of history, of American history, right? I mean, yeah, it happened to Black people, but it was perpetrated by the U.S. government and pharmaceutical companies, and you know, other scientists over time. I mean, there's multiple instances from, you know, the Civil War, you know, through the 60s and 70s of experimentation on, specifically on Black people, whether it was, you know, the Tuskegee experiments or LSD and a host of other things. The shit just gives me pause. You know, I'm just not gonna jump on board right away just because everyone is saying it's the right thing to do. Like, I know how serious this virus is. But again, I also know how nefarious our government has been in the past. And you could say that was the past, but look, that's all I got to go off of, right? I mean, like, that's what trust is, based off of your past behavior. And so, do I trust our current government? I don't give a fuck if it's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I don't know those two fucking people, right? I don't know shit about Joe Biden except for the shit that they put out there in the media. And I know even less about Kamala Harris because she's just been around a lot less longer. So I don't fucking know them. I don't trust them as far as either one of them can throw me, right? Like, so I'm not saying don't take the vaccine. All I'm saying is I'm glad that I have a time buffer from, you know, me having COVID now to when I have to, you know, think about taking this vaccine. And I just need to, you know, and even then it's just like, it's still a leap of faith that whoever is stabbing you in the arm, they're putting the right thing in you. You know, so when I go to get it, I don't know. Maybe I find a place to go get it where there's, I feel that my chances are better of it just not, you know, like maybe I go to Rocky River or something like that. you know, a place where there's not a lot of black people and just like, hey, can I get the vaccine here? You know, just, I don't know, just to make myself feel better, probably overthinking it. But I mean, it's just kind of where I'm at, you know?
Let's do a second show and focus on that. I'll let the frequently asked question stuff and we can talk more about the history.
Sure.
So Hunter Biden's taxes are under investigation and Trump is furious the DOJ did not make a bigger deal out of that prior to the election. And it won't shock me if I get up and walk by my TV and see William Barr has been fired. I mean, that will not shock me at all. And as much as I dislike William Barr, and I don't think I dislike him as much as you do, he did the right thing by not making it a political thing. One, because Hunter Biden wasn't fucking running. And two, they're doing their best, supposedly, to try to stay out of political races. Now, Barr has clearly stuck his snout into politics. I mean, he was personally representing the Trump family on a few items, which is ridiculous for the Attorney General of the United States to do. But we will see if this costs him his job. Obviously, he's not going to have the job a whole lot longer regardless, so doesn't really matter, but I'm curious.
So the thing about it is that the DOJ, like, going back to Comey, right, the DOJ really isn't, like, they're not supposed to publicly announce who they're investigating, right? That's not how it works. Like, that's not how investigations work, right? Like, if I'm a prosecutor let's just say I'm a detective, right? I'm not going to go out and say, hey, I'm investigating this guy for a major crime, right? Because what does that guy then do? He goes and turns and burns all the evidence, right? Like, once I go and make this grand statement of all this investigating I'm doing, right? Like, so the idea that we're supposed to announce these investigations goes against the idea of what an investigation is. And Hunter Biden, like you said, wasn't running. So there was no reason. And they're saying that it was from 2 years ago. Joe Biden didn't make the announcement that he was running for president until like literally the last minute right before. Now, you could say everybody knew he was going to run. Okay, but fine. He didn't make that designation until the last minute, like that he could make it, which is like happens well after Hunter Biden is under investigation. If what they're saying is true, and if the timeline is accurate, when they started investigating Hunter Biden, the other issue is, you know, William Barr has done a lot to diminish, I think, the integrity of the Office of the Attorney General and the Department of Justice. Yeah. I have no problem saying that, and there are, you know, experienced federal prosecutors who have come out and said the same thing. And so I have a little bit of an issue trusting this investigation of Hunter Biden from the get-go, right? Like, is this a legit... Now, listen, again, I've said this many times. Hunter Biden's a fucking moron. The dude is an idiot, right? Like, so it would not surprise me if he did something completely fucked up and stupid with his money or taxes or whatever and is in deep over his head and ends up doing and should be investigated and goes to jail. Problem is, because of my lack of faith in William Barr, I have to wonder, is Hunter Biden under investigation? Is it legit? Or is he under investigation because Trump wanted him under investigation because they knew that Hunter Biden was weak and stupid and they wanted to use him and they said go and they used it as a fishing expedition, go dig and find something on Hunter Biden so we can use it against Joe in the election. I mean, right? Like that's and the problem is that if that's the case then it doesn't fucking matter.
I mean, they tried that pretty hard going up to the election, all the Burisma shit. And it was, my response was always 100% of the time, like, okay, if Hunter Biden's guilty of something, investigate him, prosecute him. I don't give a fuck. He's not running for president. He will not, unlike the Trump administration, I don't see Hunter Biden being put in charge of solving the Middle East problems or, you know, I don't see Biden flooding the White House with his family, which is, by the way, something else tyrants do. Surround themselves with their family and make their family more important than the country. But I'll spare that rant.
No, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I mean, you know, Joe Biden isn't going to do. Now, I think if Bo Biden were still alive, I think Bo Biden may have a role in the White House, sure, given what he, who and what he was. But I think that's completely different, right? Hunter Biden, like, Joe's not dumb enough to give Hunter Biden any sort of access to anything. And Hunter Biden is going to have to stay as far away from the White House as possible at all times, just because of, you know, how toxic he is. But you're right. Like, this is, I mean, it's been no secret that the Trump administration has been targeting Hunter Biden from the get-go. So the idea, right, that this grand investigation of all the shit that Hunter Biden's done wrong, didn't make it to the light of day, I think supports that idea that it was a fishing expedition from the get-go. And also, it's Hunter Biden. Whatever he did or whatever he's doing, I promise you, doesn't take 2 years to unravel. The guy's just not that bright. He's not a mastermind. So whatever he did, I'm sure with the people who've been working at the DOJ for an extended period of time, they could probably unravel whatever bullshit he's into pretty quickly. So what that tells me is, chances are, if Hunter Biden has done something legitimately illegal, chances are it's not that big of a deal, right? Where the DOJ is like, we're just not wasting time with this, or they just didn't find anything. You know,
I was going to say, if Hunter Biden ends up with an official White House position, I will punch myself in the nuts on the show. But I'm not going to say that, because it might become the ambassador to Guam. And you would call that an official government position. And there would be, so that is not an offer or bet I'm making.
Yeah.
And Beto O'Rourke, as far as I know, still doesn't have a position. And so my headbanging does not have to commence. Speaking of headbanging or banging, how about Eric Swalwell?
Oh, my God.
So, Congressman Eric Swalwell was, if I understand correctly, having relations with a Chinese spy.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's... I mean, long story short, right? Like, there have been a couple of really long, in-depth articles on it that I won't go through all the different... no facts and tidbits, but long story short, Eric Swalwell, who is a huge anti-gun, you know, like, his whole thing was, you know, we're basically going to take people's guns away, and if you don't comply, we're going to send people with guns and tanks and missiles after you, because that's how, you know, ridiculous he was about this whole thing. You know, he was... basically, I believe a freshman congressman, or a two-term congressman or something like that.
He's only like 35 years old.
Yeah, he's young. Like, he just barely met the age threshold to run for president, lost pretty spectacularly early on, you know, or had to withdraw pretty spectacularly early on from lack of support with his ridiculous gun control rhetoric. We come to find out that he was sleeping with a Chinese spy, and you know, he didn't have access to much information in terms of, you know, intel and secrets and all that other stuff, mostly because of his, you know, lack of seniority and everything else. But they were clearly using him, playing a long game, hoping that he would last long enough and, you know, climb the ranks and get access, and which in turn would allow the Chinese to have access to him and what he knew. Our FBI, you know, Chinese intelligence task force caught wind of what was going on, and they basically set him down in a room and like, hey, we know you're banging that Chinese chick and she's a spy, so you need to stop. And I guess there was some denial, and then there was, is she really? And then it was, oh shit.
Way to go.
Which, I mean, like, look, man, I mean, hot Asian chick, I get it. But at the same time, like, you're a fucking congressman. You just got to be, you got to be smarter. Like, I couldn't imagine, actually, this isn't, I guess, completely bailing him out. But I couldn't imagine being in that situation, right, where you're a congressman and you, or a senator, you know, or a high level, you know, government position. And, you know, the idea of, you know, having to double, triple think who you sleep with, right? Like, I mean, because it's what, like, I have right now a very low level government position at a local, you know, a local county government level, you know, so it, like, no one's sleeping with me for secrets, right? If they're sleeping with me, it's just that they want this hot, steaming body of
it is you are hard to resist.
That's all it is, right? Like, that's you just can't resist it. But if I, let's say I were to get a job, you know, like, let's say a friend of mine that I go to law school with gets a job with the Biden administration and says, hey, Steve knows housing, let's put him up for such and such position. Then all of a sudden, you know, I'm in a completely different realm, and I have to double and triple think, you know, every move that I make, right? So I couldn't imagine what that is like. Now, I don't know if Solwell is married.
I don't either.
And so I don't know if this was like an extramarital thing, which makes it even more nefarious. You know, and I would love to say that that bothers me, but unfortunately, I'm just a bad human being, and I don't care if he's married or not. He is.
Okay, and it should bother you, if not from a moral reason, but for, it's a lot easier to blackmail a married guy who's having an affair than a guy who's having sex with a woman.
Well, yes. You're, what I'm saying is, like, I've seen so many of these politicians, like, sleeping with people that I can't, I'm not using someone, you know, having an extramarital affair as a reason to not vote for them. That's more of what I meant. But
right,
in terms of, you know, does it make him easier to manipulate from a blackmail and a spy standpoint? Absolutely. You know, and he's my age. We're the same, literally the exact same age. I'm about 2 months older than him. And he was married in 2016, so that's not good for him at all. Like, you just got married. You just got married, and you're already having an affair with a Chinese spy? Dear Lord.
I think we need an award. It should be the Anthony Weiner Award, and it should be awarded to the guy who has the dumbest extramarital affair every... It shouldn't be guys. We had Katie Hill had an extramarital affair that blew up her life.
Well, no, husband, that wasn't
true.
Her husband well, that wasn't extramarital. That was intramarital.
Okay.
Right?
Which makes it distinctly hotter.
Yeah, because it was like they had a three-way thing going, and then she said, we basically need to end this because of my political career. So the extra lover girl got her feelings hurt. She was an emotional mess. And then the husband got shitty and sent the pictures and everything to whatever news outlet he did. And that sunk her career, which I believe isn't fair, because if it was a man, I don't know if it would have ended his career. But
she's kind of resurfaced. She's kind of resurfaced lately, but yeah, we're getting down the weeds. So I was out at the Buffalo Bills backer bar last night, trying to keep my distance from my fellow watchers, which was easy because it was a small crowd last night. But during that, there was a guy in the bar having literally a tantrum meltdown because the Indians have said they're going to change their name and they're going to announce it soon. This guy was beside himself, screaming things like, they're taking away everything from us. This is bullshit. This isn't even racist. And this went on for multiple 10 to 15 second bursts over about a 5 minute period. It was insane. So anyway, the Indians have announced they're going to change their name. I've been indifferent to that cause. Call me insensitive. I don't think it, you know, I don't see it as offensive, but I do understand that some people do. I have no problem with them changing the name. I don't know what this is going to do to the Major League movie franchise, but the amount of outrage over something so trivial is hilarious to me. And by that I'm talking about the people who are so devastated about it being changed. Just okay, your team name is changing. It's happened in multiple colleges. It's happened in multiple pro teams. You still get to play the games. If you win a championship, it still counts for your city. It's comical to me.
I feel the same way. I'm sort of neutral on it, but neutral leaning towards just change it and be done with it. I don't care about the memories and the history. And frankly, here's my thing with the city of Cleveland. All the people complaining about this, that this is the worst thing, and they're taking your history, blah, 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 blah. Honestly, screw you. You know why I say that? Because Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians, had the worst attendance in Major League Baseball every year other than fucking Tampa Bay, right? Like, so I have no sympathy for you whatsoever. If you cared that much about the – then you would show up to the damn stadium during the season. Obviously, this year is the exception because of the fucking pandemic and everything else. But for the last 20 fucking years, right, like since the Cleveland Browns came back – now, mind you, the Cleveland Indians used to sell out every single game, every game. But they also didn't have a football team. There was no competition for dollars because, you know, the Browns were gone. Art Modell had moved them to Baltimore. The Cavs were really bad. This was post Larry Nance and Mark Price, and you know, after the Jordan Shot era and way before LeBron. So there was nothing. There was nothing from an athletic standpoint in the city. So back then they really supported the Tribe full force, sold out every game. Then the Cleveland Browns come back, you get LeBron, and all of a sudden, like, city of Cleveland stopped going to games. Right, like when I worked right downtown by the stadium, I would go to games on my lunch break because you could go in, you can get in the stadium for like $5, $10, $12 at the most. And I would go to the stadium, and me and my boss CJ, we would go and we would eat lunch there, watch as much of the game as we could, and then go back. And the stadium would be, we could sit anywhere we want. Right. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, you could almost get down to the, you know, first or third baseline if you wanted to. And even, you know, any game during the week, I mean, you can always, like, there's just plenty of, like, so the attendance has been garbage here for 20 fucking years. So if the team means that much to you, go to the games.
Right.
Right. You don't go to the fucking games. So how am I supposed to be so heartbroken for you because you have some shitty hat with a racist logo on it from 30 years ago? I don't care. I'm sorry. I just don't care. Fuck your feelings. Fuck your memories. I'm sorry. Get over it. You know, because if this team were to win a World Series next year, which I doubt, I mean, you're losing a shitload of talent, and I don't know what you're going to get for Frankie Lindor, but that needs to happen soon. Whole different show and conversation. But let's just say this team wins a World Series this coming season with a new name. Do you honestly, are you going to be pissed off because it wasn't the Indians that won? Are you happy that you got another championship in Cleveland? LeBron got you one in 2016 with the Cavs. So if the Cleveland Guardians or the Cleveland Spiders win one in 2021, are you mad? Are you not celebrating because of the name? Or are you going to be in the streets yelling, screaming, hugging like everyone else? You know, I mean, that's where I come out on this.
I'm with you, except for the fact that I don't like spiders, like in real life. So I really don't want that to be the team's name.
I do. I hate them too, but that for whatever reason, I think that the spiders were the name.
It was
briefly the name of the Indians,
like in 1900 or something.
Yes. So it's been proposed. I don't want to see spiders all over the city of Cleveland as a logo. So the Guardians is the name I like. And that name comes from the two guardians on the bridge. What is that? The Carnegie Bridge going over. into that connects back. Which is, I think, would be really cool. I think could make some great logos, and that's a really cool bridge if you've ever been to Cleveland and seen it. But I think that's my feel on it.
That's my vote too.
If you're mad, I really don't care.
I'm with you on that as well. All right, I'm not going to talk shit because neither of us are shit talkers. The Buffalo, we didn't get to watch the game together, and that was how we closed the last show, was deciding whether or not to. A couple listeners reached out and said that they would pay to watch that. And truthfully, it wouldn't. We've watched Bills and Steelers games once before. Granted, the stakes were a lot different, and the outcome was really, it was one of the worst games for the Bills ever. And anyway, now the AFC playoff picture gets really intense.
I'm going to jump in. First of all, my fandom isn't fun as a Steeler fan. And people don't get this, and I get that they don't get it, but and I think even sometimes you don't fully understand it. I think you're starting to grasp it. For me, it's not fun. Right. And people say, oh, well, if it's not fun, don't watch. That's also not just part of my DNA. It's beyond fun for me. Right. Like there's a physical, emotional tie that I have to that team. And I can't fully explain it. I just blame my dad and kind of go that way. But for me, like it's just not fun. Right. Like there's a part of me that when the Steelers lose, there's literally a part of me that fucking dies. Now, I've gotten better over the years, but there's a part of me that is just so sick and so angry when my team loses. Like, it is a true visceral reaction, right? Like, if you could monitor my brain over the course of a game and when they lose and then monitor my mood and feelings after, I guarantee you they would say that there's something fucking wrong with me. Because like when the Steelers lose, I'm so angry with the team, with the coaches, with every, like, if I could taste food would taste bad. Like if I were a dick, I would kick my dog and I would punch my kid. Like that's how I feel, but I don't do those things. Right. Like it just completely ruins my fucking life when those motherfuckers go out and play like retards, or fucking Randy Fintner calls games like he's never fucking drawn a goddamn football play in his motherfucking life, and he needs to be off the goddamn team. He's the fucking worst. But anyway, all that to say, this team, while it's very good, and I'm a Ben Roethlisberger is a Hall of Famer. He will go into the Hall of Fame first ballot. And I'm not even concerned about that. But the reality is Ben Roethlisberger can't throw an accurate deep ball literally to save his life at this point right now. He just can't do it. I think his timing is off. He's got the velocity, but he can't put the ball in the right spot like he used to. And so because of that, Steelers, they can't run the ball. Why? Because teams aren't respecting his ability to throw deep. So the safety help over the top is non-existent. The safety stays down in the box. Teams keep eight people in the box, and it's not so much to stop the run game because, one, we can't run the ball, but the reason they do it is because the Steelers don't throw the ball. They rarely throw the ball further than 10 yards down the field. So you keep eight people in that center zone right in front of him, and he's being forced to throw dead accurate passes to these guys running crossing routes over the middle, which is fine. Except for the fact that if your guys drop the passes or people make the tackles, then you can only go so far. So at some point in time, you have to be able to throw over the top to loosen that up a little bit, and Ben Roethlisberger can't do it. So what that means is that unless he figures that out ASAP, or the Steelers get their offensive line back and intact and are able to run the ball to create an actual threat of play action, where a guy is just running open because the safety has come up because he thinks it's going to be a run play. And, you've got a guy running by himself who can catch the ball. Like, the Steelers are going to have a lot of trouble, and I fear that they may be out early in the playoffs because the defense has been decimated between injuries and COVID and everything else. I got a lot of concerns for my team right now.
I understand. I do understand your level of intense fandom. I've definitely calmed down, but basically Buffalo fans have been beaten down for so long that, you know, from 1999.
Yeah, see, but hold on. My difference is, though, I haven't been beaten down. I saw a lot of shitty football in the 80s and the 90s, but I've also seen a lot of winning. So my bar and my expectations are very fucking high, right? From Cowher to Tomlin and Super Bowls and playoffs and everything else. You know, sure. I went through that period where I saw, you know, Bubby Brister and Kent Graham and Kevin Malone as my quarterbacks. Like, those are really rough years. But then I've had a Hall of Fame quarterback now for 20 fucking years. So it just,
I understand. And it's all right. No, but so for Bills fans, we're feeling, we've been elated for the last couple of years just because, holy shit, we don't suck again. I mean, it's been great. But soon, you know, expectations go up and frustrations get higher. And you might see me have a meltdown, although I have calmed down as I've gotten older. We should wrap this up. We got to talk about one other sports thing related to a text meltdown you had on me when I corrected you and you said Jake Paul was fighting Mayweather. And I said Logan, and it didn't go well from there. This is a bizarre thing. And actually, I think we both predicted that McGregor... We both predicted exactly what would happen with McGregor and Mayweather. But we put it on our YouTube channel, and we both got it within a round that it'd be a TKO, and we were both right. This one is so bizarre to me because Logan Paul has, like, one fight. It's not a boxing match, but he's physically a really big guy. I mean, he's 6'1 and 210 pounds or something compared to Floyd at 5'8 walking around at probably 150.
Yeah, I mean, Floyd Mayweather is just, as much as you can't stand the guy because he's ridiculous, like, tactically, defensive tactically, just, like...
The best ever, I'll say it.
He's just the best, right, he just is. So, I mean, puncher's chance, could Logan Paul hit him and knock him out? But I just, considering who I've seen not be able to hit him...
And by that, you mean everybody except Shane Mosley once.
Really, literally. I mean, it's just like, I don't know what we're doing here. I mean, I get it. It's for money. It'll make them both a lot of money. And Floyd likes to make money, and who doesn't? It's frustrating, though, because, you know, we both kind of went to the guy doesn't have any fights, let him work his way up through the ranks. And then here comes Floyd Mayweather. He can fight me and make a lot of money right out of the gate. And not have to work his way up. So it's kind of like, all right, well, that's kind of dead. So now what happens? You know, this guy fights Floyd Mayweather in an exhibition fight. Then, you know, where does he go from there? Like, who,
right.
So then it comes down to what this kid really, really wants, right? So you fight Mayweather, you know, you're going to do this charity thing, but if you really, 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 like, really want to be known as a good boxer, then he's going to need to fight his way up, right? Yeah. I mean, like, will they just start giving him fights just because he's a big draw and boxing is dead? I don't know.
So I want to make a pact that we can back out on later, because why not, that we will not pay for that fight. We're going to find out what happens either.
Yeah, I won't. No, not. Okay. I'm not paying to watch that kid get, you know, to watch fucking Floyd Mayweather dance around that kid and tap him for however long it would take.
Cool. Deal. All right. We've made an agreement. We'll stick to it. Even though I tried to leave us an out. So we good to go?
Yeah, we're good.
We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram, Twitter, and what are we on Parler? Are we at Whiskey Congress on Parler?
Yeah, I think we're, honestly, it's been so long since I've been on there, but I believe it's at Whiskey Congress, or it could be at Whiskey 216. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? I think it is at Whiskey 216. I think you did tell me that. But honestly, I didn't know we were on Parler until you told me about it on the show. So there's that.
Nope, it's just at Whiskey Congress on Parler. I don't do much on there. I haven't, you know, I think I posted a couple of stories. I did a write-up on the coronavirus months ago. which would be interesting to go back and read. Yeah, that's us on Parler. It's us on Twitter. Those are the main places where you can find us. We have other social media accounts, but those we aren't as active with those.
And we're also
Yeah.
whiskeycongress.com. So,
Yep.
all right. Thanks, man. Get well. We'll talk soon. And we are out.